think.
I see it.
I do too.
Okay.
Cool. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. You look cute today.
Oh, thanks. Really?
That's what I said about me. I'm like, I look rough. Okay. And Kristen looks cute.
My hair's up in a ponytail that
same
may or may not be falling out. And yeah, but thank you. I apologize to anybody if they hear birds chirping. I have my window open because it's warm out and I'm not closing my window. So you can deal with it.
We like the birds chirping.
I know, but some people are weird and they might not like hearing it.
I had to take our bells down because it's really windy today. And yeah. They don't bother me, but I know some of the neighbors are like, oh my God, I bet those bells are so annoying. So I took them down.
Well, I don't have bells, but I have birds. So
nice.
But all right. Shall we get into this?
Sure.
So I can get it edited tonight.
You're in a rush today, aren't you?
It's just this time change sucks.
So hi. Again.
You have to introduce
I'm
us.
Dana, everybody.
Kristen.
This is The Darker Side of Life, the podcast where two best friends tell each other strange, creepy, weird, morbid, mysterious, bizarre stories. We don't tell each other what we're going to talk about. And today you have a story for me, don't you?
I do.
What is it?
Okay. Today we're going to talk about the story of Sarah and Ryan Widmer.
Okay. Doesn't sound familiar.
Okay, cool.
I'm intrigued.
If you are in my area, this probably will sound familiar because it takes place in Mason, Ohio. Yeah, Mason is just north of Cincinnati. So it's like 30 minutes from me. This was a big deal in this area. And funny story, the Widmers own a dry cleaning. I believe it's a dry cleaning company or it's just a cleaning company.
Yeah.
And I was trying to decide between this story and another one. And driving to work a couple weeks ago, and I was sitting at a light and happened to look over, and I was like, there's a Widmer van. That's my sign. I need to do the Ryan Widmer and Sarah Widmer story. And then I'm driving to work this morning, thinking about recording, and I look in front of me, and there's a Widmer van right in front of me. So
it is a sign. The universe is telling you something.
Yes. So, okay, I'm glad you haven't heard about this.
Okay.
It's kind of a crazy story. It's nothing that's weird or creepy or anything, but it's kind of a crazy true crime story. All right. So Sarah Stewart, which is her maiden name, and Ryan Widmer both grew up in Ohio. Sarah was born in Kettering, which is just south of Dayton, Ohio. And then Ryan was born in Mason, which is north of Cincinnati. Ryan had two brothers. One was his twin, Aaron. His parents divorced in the 90s, and after that, Ryan and his brothers didn't really have a relationship with their dad. They cut off relationships with their dad and lived with their mom, Jill. They were very close with their mom. Ryan played a lot of sports in high school, and he went to college at Miami University, which is not Miami, Florida. It is in Ohio.
Right.
Yeah. It's Oxford, Ohio. So I don't want people to be confused. He went to school in Miami of Ohio, and he went to school on a partial baseball scholarship. Ryan graduated with a degree in sports studies and then went on to work for the Warren County Convention and Visitors Bureau in Ohio as their sports marketer. The idea of his job was kind of to make Warren County more of a tourist destination when it came to sports activities.
Mm-hmm.
So he tried to bring some kind of unique things to the area. So he brought gymnastics competitions, a jump roping competition, and kids' golf tournaments. So some kind of unique opportunities for people who might be in the area. Ryan was very well liked in his job, and he was very well liked just in general with the people around him. People described him as kind, soft-spoken, and someone who went with the flow, didn't really like confrontation very much. He also loved the Cincinnati Bengals. He was a big Bengals fan.
Oh, yeah.
And for people who are not in this country, that's our football team, American football team here in Cincinnati. Okay, on to Sarah. Sarah grew up in Kettering. She had one brother named Michael. She was very close with both of her parents, but especially her father, who unfortunately would pass away during Sarah and Ryan's relationship, like the beginning of their relationship. Spoiler alert, they have a relationship. They get married. And he wrote some kind of self-defense program. He was really into self-defense and martial arts, so he taught Sarah a lot. She was also an athlete in high school. She was a cheerleader. One fun fact about her is she loved going to the dentist as a kid. So when she decided what she was going to do after, or what she was going to do as a job, she decided to become a dental hygienist because she just loved going to the dentist so much. Sarah was kind. She was fun. She was spunky. And people around her said she knew how to speak her mind and stand up for herself. So she was not a pushover. She was a little more, I would say, outgoing than Ryan was. A couple of things about her that we need to talk about because it'll come up a lot in the story is she had this weird habit of falling asleep in random places and at random times. She could fall asleep in the middle of a conversation. She could fall asleep at a restaurant, out with friends. She fell asleep at bars, at tailgate parties, at bridal showers, at baby showers. And sometimes she would get to work early and sleep in her car and then sleep in her car during lunch.
So I could probably do that too.
But she would do it
She sounds like she's narcoleptic mm-hmm. almost. Yeah.
Yeah. She was never officially diagnosed with anything, but it's kind of a thought with a lot of people that she had but it also sounds something that is a little different than narcolepsy. If she's going to her work early to then go fall asleep, take a nap before work. So like the falling asleep in restaurants and everywhere. Yeah, that seems maybe narcoleptic, but also just extreme fatigue as well with falling asleep in her car before work and during lunch. Sarah was also prone to migraines, which we know about. She would get migraines frequently. Like I said, she was never officially diagnosed for any of these problems. All right, so talk about how Ryan and Sarah met. They met through mutual friends who set them up on a blind date. It was a couple, and they kind of thought that Ryan needed somebody. They knew that he wanted to start a family by the age of 30. And he met Sarah, I believe he was 26 years old. She was 23 years old. He wanted to start a family at 30, but they said he was shy and he didn't have any game. So they wanted to help him out. And they thought Sarah would be a really good match for him.
Okay.
Yeah. So they set them up on a blind date, and the four of them went out to dinner at an Irish pub. Sarah and Ryan hit it off very quickly and immediately fell for each other and started dating. They became inseparable, and friends knew it was serious when Sarah bought a Cincinnati Bengals jersey and asked to learn more about football. So I had to laugh at this as somebody who has a boyfriend who likes the Bengals a lot.
And bought a Bengals football, jersey recently.
And I bought a Bengals shirt. So I laughed at this because I've always enjoyed watching football. This was not something where I'm just going to watch it because he does. I always enjoyed it if it was on and I was at someone's house. I liked watching it. I loosely understood it, but I learned a lot more from him and followed it a lot more closely to the point where even if we weren't together on a Sunday, he set me up with an antenna on my TV so I could watch football on Sundays. And there were times where I would spend the evening watching Sunday night football. So I had to smile at this, at Sarah doing this, because I did the same thing. Only a few months after starting to date, I believe it was maybe 4 months, they bought a house together.
Oh, wow.
It was a big house. Yes. It was a four-bedroom house in a really nice, quiet neighborhood. The two of them knew that they wanted to move things along. They knew the trajectory that they wanted. They knew they wanted to start a family early and that they wanted to be together, so they took these steps. But yeah, they bought a house. In the spring of 2007, after 9 months of dating, Ryan proposed to Sarah. He tied the ring around his dog's neck and sent the dog into the bedroom and proposed to her, which she obviously said yes.
Did you say 5 months or 9 months?
Nine.
Oh, okay.
I hope I said nine.
I don't remember because I sometimes I don't understand things when I hear, but I was like, 4 months buying a house, five months proposing.
No. The two had a saying that they would always say to each other, one would say, I love you more, and the other would say, I love you most. So that was just something, that was just something cute.
I used to say, I love you best.
I love you best. The couple was married April 19th, 2008. They went to Costa Rica on their honeymoon and then settled into marriage and their new life. And they were very much in the honeymoon phase. They were pretty quickly planning another trip. They were going to go to Cancun, and then they were in the process of adopting a puppy together. And that is when August 11th, 2008 happens. So this is 114 days after the couple was married.
Oh gosh, it's so soon, and already I'm just like, oh, dread.
I know. This isn't a good story. It's not.
They never are.
Never is.
It never gets better.
Never. Sarah came home that night after work. According to her coworkers, she hadn't been feeling well that day. She had a little bit of a headache. Her neck was hurting. One of her friends said that she had talked to her that day and Sarah just didn't sound very good. So when she got home, Ryan cooked. He decided he would cook. He made leftover hamburgers, cheesy potatoes, and corn. My mom would say there's nothing green in that meal. They needed something green.
If you put lettuce on your burger.
There you go. It's green. There,
yeah. Vegetables.
Put some chives in your cheesy potatoes. You're good.
Yeah. There you go.
Green. Covered. Mom. The couple sat down to watch TV. They first watched some of Sarah's shows, and then Ryan turned on a preseason Bengals game. Sarah watched a little bit until about 10 o'clock, and then she said she was going to go upstairs and take a bath before going to bed. She kissed Ryan goodnight, told him to make sure everything was locked up before he went to bed. She told him she loved him and headed upstairs. Ryan watched the game until about 10:45, and then he decided he was going to go upstairs to the bedroom and finish watching the game there. They had a TV in their bedroom. So he goes up there, he starts to get ready for bed, and then he went into the bathroom, which was right off of the bedroom. Mm-hmm. What we know next is that a 911 call came into dispatch at 10:49 p.m., and it was Ryan. He said, quote, my wife, she fell asleep in the bathtub, I think. I was downstairs. I just came up and she's laying face down in the bathtub. He said he thought that Sarah was dead. Oh, I'm not going to play the 911 call because 911 calls actually stress me out a lot. I think it's trauma from watching that show Rescue 911 as a child.
Oh gosh, and I remember Rescue 911.
I get a lot of anxiety listening to 911 calls, and I think it's from that show because I remember watching that show and being very anxious while watching it. So you can find this call anywhere. I'm just going to kind of summarize it. Ryan is clearly, in my opinion, clearly upset in this call. He's panicked. He, as he's talking to the dispatcher, he tells the dispatcher that he pulled the drain plug out of the tub to drain the water, but Sarah was still in the bathtub. Dispatcher's like, she's still in the bathtub. And Ryan said, yes. He said he tried to do CPR the best he could, but she's still in the tub. So the dispatcher tells him to get her out of the tub and get her on a flat surface and perform CPR. It took about 29 seconds to get Sarah out of the bathtub. Throughout the call, as Ryan is performing CPR on Sarah, you can kind of hear him breathing heavy. He's talking to her. He's upset. He's crying. There'll be some questions about whether he was actually performing CPR or not, but from what I listened to, it sounded almost like he maybe had the phone like between his shoulder and his ear and as he was performing CPR. One thing that I found a little odd was that he pulled the plug first and left her in the bathtub. That was one thing that kind of was odd to me when I heard that. Because I thought, why wouldn't you grab her out of the tub to begin with? But then I thought, you know what? If I was somebody panicked and came into the bathroom and saw my loved one in the bathtub, possibly drowned, I would probably automatically pull the plug really quickly just because you're wanting to get them in your mind. It's like the water.
Get the water away.
The water is hurting them. I have to get the water away. And I would kind of just automatically pull that plug. So I get it.
Or plus, like, if he lifted her up out of the water and, like, he's got to run and go get his phone to call 911, he'd have to put her back down in it. So take the water out of the tub so she's not back into the water.
we can't judge necessarily actions like that because we don't know how we would react in a mm-hmm. situation like that. I can't imagine the panic. So I do understand. It was odd to me when I first heard it, but then I thought, you know, I do kind of understand that just gut reaction of just pulling that plug really quick to get her yeah. away from the water. When emergency services arrived, they came upstairs. Ryan was there with her. He was just in his boxers. Sarah was laying in the doorway. So the bathroom is connected to the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And her legs were in the bathroom. Her body was in the bedroom. So she was in that doorway.
Okay.
Crews started to work on Sarah and would later note that her body was still warm, but it was dry. Her hair was wet or damp.
Okay. How long did it take them to get there, I wonder?
About 7 minutes, I believe.
Okay.
Well, this will come up plenty.
Okay.
This state of dry versus wet. Yeah.
Yeah.
They noted that there was a bloody foam that was coming from her mouth and her nose. This is an indication of drowning when that happens. There were two bloody spots on the carpet. These were not under her body. This was elsewhere. I believe it was in the bedroom. It's either mm-hmm. the bed. I believe it was in the bedroom. So it was these two bloody spots that the paramedics noted that weren't under her, but they were elsewhere in the bedroom. This will also come up again. Paramedics, they tried several times to intubate her, so to put a tube down her throat to help her breathe, and they were unsuccessful. They couldn't get the tube down. They tried about six times, and on the sixth time, they finally got it. After several minutes of working on Sarah in the bedroom, they then transported her down to the ambulance and continued to work on her. This is where they finally got the intubation tube mm-hmm. down. And then they headed off to the hospital. Ryan rode in the ambulance to the hospital, and on the way, he made calls to his mom and Sarah's mom and told them what was happening and where they needed to meet him. At the hospital, as doctors worked on Sarah, Ryan talked to a nurse and answered some questions. He told the nurse that Sarah had been found face up in the bathtub. If you'll remember what I mentioned, the 911 call, he told the dispatcher that he found her face down. So this was kind of a red flag. Was it face up or face down?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, most tubs are, unless you have a huge tub, I mean, wouldn't you be face up?
I guess normally? It depends on what happened.
I guess so.
If you fall and you hit your head and your face, you fall face down. If you have a medical emergency, maybe, and you're just like laying in the bathtub, you'd be face up. But he told the dispatcher she was face down, but the nurse that she was face up.
Yeah. Okay.
So there was a contradiction there. Ryan would later say that he misspoke, that he definitely found her face up in the bathtub, and he just misspoke on that 911 call. At 11:41, Sarah was pronounced dead 52 minutes after the 911 call came in. There had never been any sign of life on her as she was being worked on at the house or in the ambulance.
Oh, God.
Ryan was there with his mom, Jill, and Jill asked the doctors if Ryan could see her, and she was told no. At 12:08, Sarah's mom, Ruth Ann, was allowed to see Sarah, but Ryan was still unable to see his wife.
Huh.
So what's going on here? Why aren't they letting him see her?
Is it some kind of policy, like in case it is foul play, you keep them separated? But
I think that they pretty quickly were suspecting foul play.
Yeah.
And you'll kind of see that when we talk about what follows. Things happen very, very quickly in this. But I think that they were suspecting that things weren't adding up and maybe Ryan wasn't telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
While Ryan waited to see Sarah, he talked to the police at the hospital and he signed a consent to search form, which gave police permission to go search his home. He said he didn't think he had anything to hide. But I think at this time, like I said, they were honing in on him as a possible suspect.
Okay. That would make sense.
Happened to Sarah.
Yeah, that would make sense of why they wouldn't let him see her at the hospital, because he could like do something to the body or hide evidence or
Right.
contaminate it somehow.
Ryan and his mom did have to go back to the house that night so he could get some clothes. He did not want to go in, so his mom went in to get things for him. His mom could tell that the police had been there. There had been investigators had cut out sections of that carpet, that bloody carpet.
Yeah.
So those were taken away. But she said that there was really nothing else out of place. The bathroom wasn't messed up. The bathroom looked fine. Sarah's rings were sitting there, so she grabbed them to go give to Ryan. But as far as what the bathroom looked like, it didn't. There were shampoo bottles that were still in the bathtub. Mm-hmm. There were things on the sink. Nothing really looked out of place. But those two like carpet squares were gone. The next day, August 12th, Ryan's boss was informed what happened, and everybody that he worked with was really upset because they were very close with Ryan and Sarah. They were like a family. Ryan, on August 12th, was asked to come in and talk to the police, and the families thought that he needed an attorney when he went in,
mm-hmm.
which you always should, even
if
you
have
nothing
agree.
To hide. You should always get an attorney, no matter what. It's not going to make you look more guilty. It's going to protect you. That is mm-hmm. your right. So to me, that kind of seems like the family knew something was going on if they're instructing him to go get an attorney.
Yeah. And, you know, they cut the blood samples from the carpet right. and got a search
they're
warrant.
They're searching the house.
They're looking yeah. for something.
Mm-hmm.
Something is on their radar.
So the family found an attorney named Charlie Rickers. He was an attorney in the Mason area who had defended people in homicide cases. It was really hard to find an attorney with that type of experience, but he had a successful record in this and was recommended to the Widmer family as somebody who would be good for Ryan. Ricker said that he heard Ryan's story. He had no reason to doubt him. He said he believed him, and he really just thought he was going to go with Ryan to the police station just as a buffer, just to be there just in case
yeah.
and help him in any way that he needed. But he didn't think that Ryan had anything to do with Sarah's drowning. Also on August 12th, an autopsy was performed on Sarah. So this is a day after. They got this done very quickly. And the coroner ruled the cause of death is drowning and the manner of death is homicide.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. The coroner said that he found signs that there had been some trauma to the body that made him suspect homicide. On August 13th, 2 days after Sarah's death, Ryan was making plans for Sarah's funeral when he gets a call from his attorney, Charlie Rickers, who tells him there is a warrant out for his arrest and he needs to go turn himself in. This
Whoa.
Is fast. He talked to the
Holy
police.
Holy moly.
Once, I mean, the hospital, and then he went in to talk to the police. And 2 days after his wife's death, there's a warrant out for his arrest.
And what kind of evidence do they have then for that warrant?
We'll talk about the evidence. Charlie Rickers told Ryan that the police had been at the house. They'd broken down the door, which I don't understand why you're going to break down the door, because
if you have a search warrant, just unlock the door like a normal person.
Calm down, people. Just calm down.
It's American police. They got to play SWAT team and G.I. Joe and all that crap.
It's in Mason, Ohio, in the suburbs. It's fine, people. You're fine. Calm down. The police, when they had been at the house, they collected 43 different items. They bagged them and took them away. Ryan turned himself into the police, and he was arrested for murder. Again, this is 2 days after the death. Rachel Hutzel, she's the Warren County prosecutor, and Lieutenant Jeff Braley, who was the lead investigator in this case, they had a press conference announcing the arrest. They had kept a lot of things tight-lipped. The media didn't really even know much beyond a woman had died in her home.
Right.
And then it's announced that her husband has been arrested in connection with her death. Hutzel, she said that there had been trauma to Sarah's body that only the coroner could see, that it wasn't visible to the common person, but the coroner had found signs of a trauma.
Okay.
The Widmer family, they paid for a second autopsy before Sarah would be cremated.
Okay.
So Sarah and Ryan had never really discussed their burial plans. I mean, mm-hmm. they'd been married
for
4 months and
they're young.
So when Ryan was asked, what did she want? He didn't know, but he chose cremation because he said it was the cheapest.
Yeah.
So the family, the Widmer family wanted to get a second autopsy before her remains were cremated. Ryan's dad, who he was not close with, hadn't been at the wedding. He didn't even know his son was arrested until he saw it on the news. Can you imagine that? God. Watching the news and you find out your son's been arrested for murder. So, shocker, he leaves to go to his son and to help out in any way that he can. On August 14th, Ryan has his first court appearance, and his family is there as well as Sarah's family, and Sarah's family supported him completely at this point. And they told the judge that Ryan had nothing to do with this. He was a hero for trying to save Sarah's life. And they pleaded with the judge to let Ryan out on bail so he could be there to bury his wife. Bail was set at $1 million.
Holy moly.
The judge said that he was a flight risk.
Holy moly.
Mm-hmm. On August 15th, Ryan was indicted and charged with aggravated murder, which carries a 20 to life sentence. And I believe because there would be two charges when this goes to trial, aggravated murder and murder. Mm-hmm. So he had two charges. But aggravated murder, from what I understand, is there's planning involved in it, where yeah. your first degree is your premeditated. So obviously aggravated still has premeditation, but there's more mm-hmm. of a planning that goes involved in that is involved in that. Well, your first degree murder is more of the premeditated, which could be something that you're strangling somebody and that could be considered first degree murder because you have consciously made that decision to mm-hmm. strangle somebody. But aggravated murder was the one that brought the bigger sentence. On August 20th, Ryan was arraigned and his bail was lowered to $400,000. You only have to pay 10% of that. So his dad was able to get into his retirement account and pay the $40,000 to get Ryan out of jail. And this was on the day of Sarah's funeral. So they really were trying to hold everything off so Ryan could get there for the funeral. But he was released 2 hours too late and he missed the funeral.
Aw.
And the public at this point was pretty split on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people thought he did it. A lot of people thought that he didn't do it. So there was definitely this divide in this area about what people thought.
I just want to see what this evidence is.
Funny you should say that because we're going to talk about the evidence next. Nice.
It's like I read your mind.
So there was the circumstantial evidence of the statement that Ryan made on the 911 call that she was face down and yeah. then later saying she was face up. Mm-hmm. Sarah had two cuts on her lip. She had three bruises on her scalp. She had hemorrhage on her chest. And the thought was that Ryan had pushed her down
onto
the bathtub. And so you can't see me, everybody, yeah. but where I'm like pointing to, that the hemorrhage on her chest was from the pressure of being pushed down against the tub.
Mm-hmm.
She had no defensive wounds. She had just had a manicure that day and her nails were fine. There were no chips. There were no breaks. Everything looked fine. Ryan's DNA was not under her nails, but there was female DNA found under her nails.
Well, it was probably a woman that did her nails at the salon.
She had a manicure that day. She's a dental hygienist.
Right.
She's a human being out in this world. DNA is, especially touch DNA, but any kind of DNA, it's everywhere.
They could have narrowed it down too. Like they could have went to the nail salon and said, hey, could we, possibly test the person who did her nails and see if it's a match. If they really, really wanted to find out.
Right. I don't think they tested anyone from the manicure place unless she did it herself. I'm not.
Yeah,
I thought that she got it done. They did test some of the female officers who were at the scene. They tested her coworkers that she'd been with. It didn't match anything. And this piece of evidence really just seems to go by the wayside because it is very easy to get somebody else's DNA on you. It's not, if it was somebody else's blood or bodily fluids.
Right. That I could
different.
See being weird.
But
I mean, there's probably your DNA in my house still.
Yeah. I shed everywhere. My hair is everywhere. If I'm ever arrested for murder, I'm going to say it's because my hair. Isn't it? Because my hair has ended up at some crime scene.
Every now and then we still find some of Teenie's hairs and some of Lexi's hairs around.
They never go away.
I don't want them to.
They never go away. So, yes, I shed everywhere. So DNA can end up in lots of places. Mm-hmm. The bathtub was studied heavily. There were two sets of fingerprints, and I use that term very loosely. They were at the back of the bathtub, and they were like a downward swiping motion. So they weren't even clear fingerprints. They were just kind of finger-like prints,
right?
You think if you're wiping. So again, the thought is if she's being held down and she's trying to maybe push herself against the back of that tub and her hand is sliding down. There was also the impression of a man's arm at the edge of the bathtub. And they believe it was a man based on the prints, like the hair prints from it.
Yeah.
So you think if someone has a hairy arm, they're going to lay their, brace their arm down and they're going to leave that print. So they found one of those prints. There was a Lysol wipe that was found near the tub. And there was evidence that there had been a Lysol wipe on the side of it. There was a packed pink suitcase of Sarah's that was sitting in the bedroom that police, I guess, suspected maybe she was mad and leaving, that there was some marital problems going on. Mm-hmm. But she just got back from a trip with her mom the weekend before and she just hadn't unpacked yet. She's like,
I mean, if I was angry and was going to leave, I'm not going to take a bath first, though.
Right, right.
I mean,
I'm ticked off at you, but let me soak in the bathtub.
Exactly. Okay.
The police had turned on the downstairs TV that Ryan said he was watching the Bengals game on. Mm-hmm. And the downstairs TV was not on the correct channel that it needed to be on for the Bengals game. The upstairs TV was. The downstairs wasn't.
I mean, he could have changed the channel. Flipped it through or something. And it's like, all right, nothing else is on. I'm going to bed.
He did. The Olympics were on. And this was when Michael Phelps was dominating in the swimming competitions. So Ryan said he had briefly switched over to watch one of Michael Phelps's races, watch the race, and then decide, I'm going to go upstairs and finish the game and turn the TV off. So there were a couple podcasts I did listen to that brought up this TV thing, but didn't bring up the Olympics thing. So, which this was something I had always heard about the TV being on the wrong channel, but there's a reasonable explanation for this that a lot of people don't bring up when they report on this case. Police did not look into Sarah's health issues, her falling asleep, her migraines. Yes.
That'd be one of the first things I checked.
Yes. For somebody to suddenly die in the bathtub.
Like she could have had an aneurysm or a stroke or something like that and drowned in the bathtub because of her migraines or some kind of health issue. And nobody would have even known.
Which is somebody who gets migraines, that terrifies me.
It does, me too.
It's on my mind a lot when I have a particularly bad one. And I think is something else going on that is beyond a migraine.
It's sad too, because I had one a couple of days ago and it was, I usually don't get the ones where I end up throwing up.
Mm-hmm.
But this one I did. And then I took a shower and like felt a little better and I managed to power through it. But sometimes like my head will hurt so bad, I'm thinking, at what point do I go to a doctor?
Oh, yeah. I have those.
Because, I mean, it's like I'm used to it. I'm so used to this just like piercing pain in my head.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so severe. It's like, how severe is too severe?
I've had a couple of those, too, where I get sick and the pain is beyond even my worst ones. And it does feel like my brain is pulsating. It has been so bad. And I've laid there thinking, do I need to go to the hospital? Is something serious happening?
Yeah.
So I do. It's a horrible feeling. And it's scary to hear somebody who has migraines who suddenly die in the bathtub.
Yeah.
But they didn't look into it. They didn't look into her health issues.
I mean, she said she wasn't feeling well earlier that night.
She wasn't. And coworkers said she wasn't feeling well. A friend spoke to her and said she wasn't feeling well. Her mom did testify. She spoke with Sarah that day and Sarah sounded fine. But
still not feel well and sound fine.
But I have also been feeling like crap, especially from a migraine, and talked to my mom and pretended like I was fine because I don't want her to worry about it. So I say I'm fine when really I'm in a lot of pain. So I think that's just what some people do.
Mm-hmm. Surely Ryan would have mentioned it to the doctors at the hospital, too, that she said she wasn't feeling good earlier in the day.
Well,
the doctors could tell the cops that.
he did make a comment that said he had been worried that she was going to fall asleep in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And they asked, well, did she fall asleep in the bathtub frequently? And he said, no, but she falls asleep in weird places. Mm-hmm. So it was a concern of his, and it was something that he thought about when he found her. And that's it as far as evidence. That's it.
Okay. That's not a lot.
No.
If you ask me.
No. And as far as motive, investigators looked into that. There was no history of abuse for Ryan. Sarah never said anything, which doesn't mean there's not abuse. Even if the significant other spouse doesn't say anything, there right. could still be abuse going on. But there had never been anything odd.
I mean, it's the like couple, a Gabby Petito, Brown Laundry situation.
Right. There was a reported history of it. Doesn't mean there wasn't one. We just don't know of one. There were no money troubles for the couple. They both made decent money. I mean, they owned a nice house. Some would say that Ryan controlled her spending. There had been a moment at Target. I think she was with her mom. And Ryan called her and said something along the lines of, do you really need to spend that money? But Sarah's mom said, well, it was actually kind of joking. Like, Sarah had said something joking to him earlier about stop mm-hmm. me from spending that money at Target. And it was more of a joking, like, do you really need to do that? They did search his computer and they found that he searched porn the weekend she was away. So,
I mean, if he was looking up like some kind of drowning women kink, then yeah, it's connected. But
right,
otherwise,
right.
Whatever.
Yeah. They found that he searched it the weekend that she was gone. He also possibly visited a swingers site, but they said that could also be from a pop-up from one
yeah,
of the
it could
sites.
Be one of those accidental things.
So
accidental click.
He searched porn. That doesn't mean he killed his wife. I don't know. I don't really think that's motive that mm-hmm. he's going to kill his wife. But like you said, if it was something related to drowning women, that would
right.
be a little different.
Yeah.
There was a life insurance policy on Sarah, but it wasn't active yet. She had just got it done. She made a comment to a friend that Ryan had been on her ass about it, but it's because they had gone to a financial planner who said, you guys need to get this done ASAP. It's right. one of those things that you have to do after you get married. Mm-hmm. So it's just checking off those boxes. The trial was set to start November 17th, 2008. But the second autopsy results had come in. And Charlie Rickers had submitted them to the state 2 weeks before the trial. So mm-hmm. the state said they needed an extension because he needed time to be able to go over the second autopsy.
Okay.
The trial was rescheduled for March 2009. During this time, Ryan lived with his mom, Jill. He was out on bail. He had a curfew. He had to be drug tested on a regular basis. Friends said that he was very paranoid. He thought he was being followed by the police. He lost a ton of weight. He was over 6 feet tall. He weighed about 190 before this happened, and he dropped down to about 155.
Wow.
On October 11th, Sarah's remains were officially buried, and things were starting to kind of sour between Ryan and Sarah's family.
Did they not cremate her after all, or did they inter her?
They did cremate her, but then sometimes you bury...
Oh, bury the ashes. Okay.
Right, you bury the ashes. So they had the funeral for her, like the service, and then they buried her in October. Yeah. Her family did not put the Widmer name on her headstone. So things were kind of starting to turn for Ryan as far as Sarah's family was concerned. They mm-hmm. weren't as supportive anymore. And this would be the last time that they would speak.
Oh, awkward and sad.
It's sad because they liked him. Like this was their son-in-law and mm-hmm. they really liked him, and his mom really liked Sarah. So it's really sad to see that it all kind of fell apart and that support that he had in the beginning was gone. The trial started March 23rd, 2009 in Lebanon, Ohio. The jury was 6 men and 6 women. It was kind of difficult to find jurors because a lot of people knew about this case and a lot of people had opinions. Hmm. The state, in their opening statements, reminded the jury that motive is not required, which I think is kind of funny because I'm like, clearly you guys couldn't find a motive, so you had to remind
motive
them,
is not
like,
required.
Hey, we don't need a motive. Motive isn't required in a trial. You don't... I think of the Alex Murdaugh trial that just happened. And they did give a motive for that, but it was not something that is required of them. When you think about it, I mean, people kill people for stupid reasons. So
yeah.
A lot of times people want to think motive is this big, spectacular thing. And sometimes it's just, you know, they sneezed in my direction and I got mad.
And also it's probably that if you do argue motive, it will just strengthen your case. If you don't argue it, well, I mean, you have nothing to lose, really.
Right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to break down the evidence that the state presented, and then I'm going to say how the defense countered it, because obviously the state is the one that has to prove guilt. The defense just has to create reasonable doubt. The hemorrhage. So the hemorrhage was brought up. There was hemorrhage that was in the deep muscle of the neck at the midline, which could indicate strangulation, which is different than drowning. So I'm kind of confused about that, because the cause of death was drowning. But
what did the second autopsy say?
We'll talk about that. There were only a few differences for what that coroner found. I'll go ahead and talk about now. There were some other bruises that didn't show up on the first autopsy that showed up on the second autopsy. But the defense would kind of explain why that's possible and why that does happen. So there were no big differences between the autopsies. Just a couple
small
bruises
things
and injuries that popped up. But as far as this hemorrhage, the defense countered that it could have been from CPR that was performed on Sarah for over an hour.
That's true.
And CPR is rough. It is, you are trying to save someone's life, and a lot of times there's trauma that's done to the body just from CPR.
You can't break rib bones and sternums and things.
Yeah, it's very common that you have ribs and sternums broken because of CPR. The 911 operator took the stand. He claimed that Ryan was calm during the call. I don't think he was at all.
Okay.
I think he sounded panicked, and so panicked that his voice is kind of raised a little bit. And at one point, the 911 operator says, "So how are you related to her? Are you her mother?" And he's like, "I'm her husband." So I think he was so worked up. I think his voice kind of went up, and they thought he was a woman.
Oh, wow.
Which is not a calm person. The deputy who came to the crime scene, he said that he believed the body had been moved. So he pointed to the bloody spots that were on the carpet that were not under Sarah. And he believed that that was from Ryan moving her body, trying to stage some kind of crime scene. Ryan said that it was the paramedics who moved the body. Paramedics said, "No, we didn't move the body." But I don't really see how that's possible. She was in a doorway, so I feel like they would have moved her out of the doorway to be able to work on her a little easier. So it was very much a he said type of thing of, did he move her? Did he not? Did somebody move her? Where did these bloody prints or bloody spots come from?
And they know that the bloody spots are from her. They DNA tested it and everything.
Yes. I would think they were from the bloody foam that was coming out of her mouth.
That's what I was
going to
think.
Right. And if he gets her out of the tub, I don't blame him for not remembering exactly what he did. If he gets her onto the carpet, she's got to be heavy. If he stumbles a little bit, even drops her a little bit, if she has this bloody foam coming out of her mouth and tub, it could have gotten onto the carpet. And then he moves her. I would say he was trying to maybe move her more into the bedroom.
Yeah.
If she's half in the bedroom, half in the bathroom. So I don't. And also, what crime scene are you trying to clean up? She drowned. You're not like, what are you trying to
with
stage?
With your single Lysol wipe on the tub that you're going to wipe away your finger. Like, what?
And what are you trying to stage?
Yeah.
What point would it be to move her away out of the way of those bloody spots? I don't know. It's just weird. The deputy also brought up the fact that Sarah was mostly dry and the bathtub was also mostly dry. Ryan was dry. Everything around the tub was dry. He said there were no wet towels on the floor. There were no towels in the washer. There were no towels in the dryer. There had only been a little water around the drain of the tub. And the tub was mostly dry when they got there. So their point was, she this incident happened way before he called 911, enough time that everything dried out. Mm-hmm. He staged the scene and then he called 911. But a forensic team had also been at the house 2 hours before the police had been there, and they said, no, things were definitely wet.
Oh, they thank cut you, up forensic those, team.
Yeah. They cut those pieces of carpet out and they bagged them in paper bags, mm-hmm. and said that they were so wet that they soaked into the bag. And these carpet samples, not samples, these carpet cuttings were shown during the trial. And on the back of them, so the underside, you could see water spots and water stains, okay. where the water had, mm-hmm. dripped through. So they said, no, you had got there 2 hours after we did. So, of course, things were dry.
Yeah. Okay.
And a lot of factors will go into how quickly things dry. You have humidity. Mm-hmm. I will say August in this area, it's humid. So that would make it a little longer for something to dry. I don't know what humidity was that night. I just know August in this area is hot and humid. Mm-hmm. But was there a window open? Was there a fan on? Was there an air vent in the bathroom? What was the circulation like? Ryan pulled her out of the tub. So you would think that some water absorbs onto him, and that could possibly be why her body was dry. So, mm-hmm. there's a lot of factors that go into it. But I think the fact that the police were there 2 hours later and then saying everything's dry is not.
Yeah.
It's not the best assessment.
Especially since the forensics team says otherwise. And you guys are on the same team, the forensics team and the police.
Right. Yes.
So you do not agree.
The Lysol wipe was brought up.
Lysol wipe.
He said that was used to clean up something. I don't know what he's cleaning up.
Well, then
up.
You can she test drowned. The Lysol wipe.
Right.
And I mean,
she drowned.
I have those in my bathroom too.
It could be from anything. They had a dog. Maybe the dog got the side of the tub dirty if you're washing the dog in the tub. It's a bathroom. There's bodily functions and stuff ends up places. You shave your legs on the side of the tub, you cut yourself, you get blood and you wipe it off. Mm-hmm. So it can be so many things.
Ooh, not with the Lysol wipe though. Off my leg anyway.
No, but like off the bathtub. Oh, like if you cut yourself and maybe get blood on the bathtub.
Yeah.
The state said that there was no pruning on Sarah's fingers or toes. So with that they meant she'd been out of the bathtub, mm-hmm. or she maybe hadn't even been
in the
bathtub.
Or she just didn't put her hands in the water for a long time. Because I like to, sometimes I'll read a book or look at my phone or something. I just don't get my hands wet.
You rest your arms on the side
of
the tub.
Yeah, do that or like hang them over or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people read in the bathtub. They play on their phone. They look at magazines. So there's plenty of reasons that her fingers may not have been pruned.
Okay.
Hair. So the hair... Sarah's hair was an issue. Mm-hmm. One paramedic said it was damp. One said it was wet. So there's no consensus on what her hair was. Also,
to me, though, how wet and damp can be subjective.
They are very subjective.
It depends on, like, are we talking sopping, dripping wet? Are we talking you just wrang it out?
They just said wet.
Did you have a towel around it? Because I have long hair. And when I get out of the shower, it's dripping wet. Then I have to wring it out. And then I have to put a towel around it. And it's still pretty wet after I wring it out. Then I put a towel around it for a while, and then I flip the towel around to the dry side, the other side, and put it back up again. My hair's still pretty damp.
How thick was her hair?
Exactly.
I have thicker hair. It takes freaking ever to dry.
Yeah, see, mine doesn't. Mine dries fast, though.
Mine doesn't. I wish mine did, and I wish it dried not crazy like a freaking lion, but it takes a while. I don't know what Sarah's hair was like. And again, a lot of factors go into this.
Yeah.
So it's too subjective. Damp, wet, whatever.
Right.
She was also laying on carpet, so the carpet could have absorbed some of it. The cuts on her lip were also an issue. The prosecution said it was from a struggle with Ryan, but the defense countered it took them 6 tries to intubate her.
Oh, there you go.
And it could have been caused by that intubation tube. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of swelling in the neck, which is why it was taking a long time to intubate her. You're trying to shove a tube down. You're not being gentle about it. Those cuts could have come from the tube. An expert witness for the prosecution claimed that it was impossible for anyone to fall asleep in the bathtub and drown unless there was a medical emergency or there was drugs or alcohol involved. Your body's going to wake itself up, mm-hmm. if you fall asleep or you're gonna, once your oxygen starts to be depleted, you're gonna snap out of it.
Right.
There were no drugs or alcohol in Sarah's system. So the prosecution's point is she had to have been drowned by Ryan. He had to have held her down because there were no drugs or alcohol in her system. And as far as they know, there wasn't a medical emergency. But the defense said that Sarah could have had what's called narcolepsy with cataplexy. And it is possible when you have this kind of episode, this narcolepsy with cataplexy, it's possible to drown because you lose muscle control. You basically become a wet noodle. Mm-hmm. So people apparently have almost drowned in the bathtub when they've had one of these episodes because they just lose control of their body. But Sarah was never diagnosed from this. So she did fall asleep in a lot of places. Did she have some kind of narcoleptic disorder? But they never looked at her medical history, and it would come out later, we'll talk about it later, that the coroner didn't know what part of the, first of all, he didn't kind of set the brain right to then be able to examine it, and he didn't know the parts of the brain to look at to see if she had had narcolepsy or some kind of seizure. He didn't know what to look for.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then there was the star witness for the prosecution, and that was the bathtub.
What?
Yes.
Wait, I need a minute.
Yep. Didn't expect that one, did you?
No. I was like very quickly going through my mind. I'm like, Ryan's going to testify, like his mom, like police officer, paramedic or something. Okay, but we're calling in an inanimate object to the stand.
The bathtub. The bathtub out of the house.
Oh my God.
They brought it into the courtroom. It was covered in black fingerprinting powder. And the prosecution pointed out the, quote, prints on it in the arm, quote, imprint on it. They said that there was a downward swiping motion of these fingerprints. Uh-huh. There were swipes that indicated somebody's hand had been there. There had been a possible struggle. They said they pointed to the streaks from the Clorox wipe or Lysol wipe or whatever, that it had been cleaned out, even though I don't know what they're cleaning out. And so a possible explanation for this is the fact that you took a bathtub out of the bathroom. I'm sure people were wearing gloves. I would hope that they were wearing gloves. Are they not going to get marks on the bathtub?
But I mean, if you fingerprinted my bathtub, of course there's going to be like weird marks on it. I'm climbing in and out of it all the time. I use it to rinse out the mop bucket and other things. So my fingerprints will be all over it, all kinds of randomness. Yeah. And if I was going to clean up evidence, I would throw away the rags that I clean the evidence with.
Right. And I'm not going to try and clean up a bathtub unless there's
leave them there,
blood in it
for the cops to find that I told you could come in and look for.
It's a bathtub in their own home. Of course, there's going to be swipe marks and fingerprints. They had a dog. They could have washed the dog in the bathtub. When I'm cleaning, my hand is on the side of the tub as I'm leaning in and scrubbing the bathtub out. So, of course, there's going to be fingerprints. Also, fingerprinting powder had not been used until 2 days after Sarah died. So, it wasn't even right after. So, there were people that were coming in and out of the house. Oh. And was 2 days before that was the fingerprinting powder was used. Sarah's mom, Ruth Ann, testified. I feel so bad for this woman. But she said that Sarah was healthy, and she said that she'd never fallen asleep in the middle of a conversation like Ryan had said she did. But there were several people who were friends with Sarah and worked with Sarah who said that she had. And I feel so bad. She's trying to make sense out of something that will never make sense to her. It just means that Sarah never fell asleep with her. And again, if she had this issue, maybe she didn't want her mom to worry, so she didn't talk to her mom about it. The coroner testified. He talked about the neck hemorrhage. It was 4 inches long. There was a bruise above the sternum, like we said. He said that injury could have actually come from being hit and not from the paramedics trying to revive her. There were bruises on her head and her neck. He reiterated that the cause of death was drowning based on the fluid in her lungs and sinus cavities. The second autopsy, They had a second bruise that showed up on her neck that hadn't been on the first autopsy. However, bruises can take time to pop up.
Right.
But because the bruise was the size of a thumb, the prosecution said it had been caused by Ryan pressing on her carotid artery. On cross-examination, the coroner admitted that there is something that is called hemodilution. This is when water is in the blood. And it can make bruises appear worse than they really are, mm-hmm. which would mean that these bruises, she drowned, so she would have been experiencing this hemodilution, mm-hmm. and her bruises could have looked a lot worse than they were. CPR could as well make these bruises look worse. There was a doctor at the hospital who testified for the defense. He said he believed all of her injuries were caused by the paramedics working on her. The coroner admitted that they were not board certified, and they did admit that it was possible that Sarah had a seizure. This coroner was not qualified and didn't know how to properly examine the brain. So like I said before, parts of the brain that could indicate a seizure were not checked by this coroner. The coroner also admitted that Sarah's hyoid bone was intact. The hyoid bone usually breaks in cases of strangulation. So that was intact.
Okay.
This name might sound familiar to you. Mm-hmm. It might sound familiar to a lot of true crime people. Dr. Warner Spitz testified for the defense. Do you recognize that name?
I don't think so.
Warner Spitz has a pretty good resume. He has performed autopsies on JFK, Martin Luther King Jr.
Whoa.
He was involved in the JonBenet Ramsey case and was the one who came up with the Burke did it theory. He was also involved in the Kaylee Anthony case.
Oh, wow. So he's like the celebrity autopsy guy.
Yes. I'm sure you would probably recognize something that he's worked on. He's in documentaries all the time, but he had a very impressive resume. He countered the Ohio coroner, and he said what can happen during drowning is as the lungs absorb more water during the drowning process, the blood pressures will rise and your red blood cells will explode, which releases hemoglobin. I said that right?
Hemoglobin? I don't know. One of them.
One of them. That thing. This causes more bleeding and it can make injuries appear worse, mm-hmm. which is why her bruises looked so bad. He believed that her bruises could have been caused by possibly hitting her head during a seizure and not from a blow to the head, which you would expect to look a lot worse.
Right.
He did agree with the finding that the cause of death was drowning, but he said the manner was undetermined. He said she could have had sudden cardiac arrest or a first-time seizure, and that her symptoms that day, the headache that she had, that can be precursors a lot to a seizure.
Oh, dear. That's scary.
It's scary. Yes, it is. So he's not saying that it was cardiac arrest. He's not saying that it was a seizure. He's saying it could be. It could be all these other things that did not equal homicide. There was a forensic pathologist named Charles Lee. He was called by the prosecution, and he agreed with the Ohio coroner that it was homicide. And he said it's possible Sarah was drowned in a toilet or sink.
What?
So they're not even like, it's not even the bathtub at that point. It said, well, it could have been the toilet or sink.
Okay, let me just make my crime scene a lot smaller. So if it was on the toilet, you could have fingerprinted. You could have called the toilet in for evidence.
The toilet in.
Or the sink. You could have fingerprinted them. And she would have a lot more marks on her head and neck from being like thrust into a toilet bowl. Because you're going to have to put somebody's head pretty far into a toilet to get them to drown.
Right. You're going to have bruises on like
because that water is
low. On your ear. Yeah. I don't think I buy this toilet thing. It's just like they're throwing out everything at that
point. They are.
And also a sink. Like a sink's not very deep. And
you would hit your head on the faucet. Oh, my God. You would hit your head on the faucet.
Yeah, well, she did have a bruise. She had some
bruises
on her head. And there, I feel like there would maybe be evidence on the faucet as well. If there's maybe hair, I don't know. That's just...
You'd be able to tell if there was like a wound, like, and it would be on the front mm-hmm. of her head and not the back of her head if it was a faucet.
Well, it could be the back if he had her head shoved down.
Yeah.
And yeah. She jerked back up and smacked the back of her head on the faucet.
You'd still be able to probably tell, though.
Right. It's just awkward. And again, nothing was out of place in the bathroom. This was not a big bathroom, and there wasn't evidence that there had been a struggle in the bathroom. There wasn't evidence on Ryan that he didn't have any wounds on him. And remember, Sarah's dad had trained in self-defense.
Right.
And helped train her in self-defense. And people who knew her said she was going to fight back, but he didn't have any injuries on her. She didn't have any injuries on her, except for the bruising and the cuts on her lip. Ryan did not testify, which is understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Most attorneys will tell you not to testify. Mm-hmm. Closing arguments started on day 8. The prosecution and their closing arguments, they brought up rigor mortis, and they said it was setting in by the time the paramedics got there, meaning that Ryan had delayed in calling 911 while he cleaned up the scene. So the defense objected to this, and they said, hey, you never brought up rigor mortis during the trial. We didn't have any experts on this. Where is this coming from?
We're
just kind of throwing this out. The judge upheld it. Not upheld it. The judge allowed it. And he said the jury, it was up to the jury to determine what was evidence and what was not.
Which, oh my God, jurors are idiots.
Right. It's the jurors have to look at the evidence that is presented to them. It's not their responsibility to figure out what's evidence and what's not. So
does this judge know how trials work?
We have more to go. We have more to go. You think this is ending? It's not. We have more to go. The defense in their closing arguments focused on the lack of motive and also lack of any sign of struggle in the bathroom. The charges to consider were murder or aggravated murder. So that's that murder with prior planning.
Yeah.
During deliberations, the jury requested to see the bathtub. A lot of people were curious about that, thinking, what are they doing with the bathtub with the star witness?
I have questions for the bathtub. Where were you the night of?
August 11th. On day 2, the jury reached a verdict after 23 hours of deliberation.
23 hours? It took them 23 hours to figure this out?
Mm-hmm. Sarah's family was not there for the verdict. Ryan was found not guilty of aggravated murder. He was found guilty of murder.
What the hell?
Everyone was shocked.
That's not better. Oh my gosh. I just went from like surprisingly shocked to like, oh my God. Like again, like I don't know what I expected. Like you dangled the carrot and then you took it away from me.
Just you wait.
There's so much reasonable doubt. So much.
I know. Even the media was shocked. Even the media who were there were thinking, whoa. Ryan's uncle had such a bad outburst that he was arrested and taken into custody. And Ryan was devastated. He doubled over and he said later he felt like he'd been hit with a sledgehammer.
I bet.
He was shocked. And I've said that word several times, but he was. Ryan received 15 years to life in prison. He was asked if he wanted to speak. And he said he loved Sarah and did not hurt her. Ryan had a lot of public support, and most people believed that he was innocent. There were Facebook pages that were popping up to support him. There were fundraisers. T-shirts were sold, merchandise, golf outings. Anything that could be used to raise money to help him in his appeal was done.
What, like, okay, just goes... I would like to hear interviews with the jurors.
Hold on.
Somebody speak
hold
out
on.
And say why.
We got more to go. This isn't over yet. Okay, oh we God. Got more. Just you hang on. Hold your horses. There was a juror who was interviewed after this all happened.
It's like I'm reading your mind and what you're going to say next. Maybe I should tell the story.
Go for it. I guarantee you have no idea what happens. Because...
Well, I don't know. We've had a bathtub in court and a crazy verdict. It was like unexpected.
This juror that was interviewed, he said that the two pieces of evidence that they really struggled with was the bathroom being dry and Sarah being dry. And those were the two that primarily convicted Ryan. This juror also said that Ryan didn't show emotion, which isn't evidence at all. And most of the time, attorneys are going to tell you, you do not react, which is exactly what Ryan's did. Mm-hmm. He said, you do not react. The jury said that they did not believe the timeline that Ryan gave during his call. They used a stopwatch to time to see how long it would take to drain a bathtub and try and maybe get somebody out. Ryan said it took about 29 seconds. The thing is, jurors should not be doing that. They're not allowed to do their own experiments. You have to look at the evidence that has been presented in court and that evidence alone. So they should not have performed that experiment.
They're idiots.
Afterward, Rachel Hutzel, who was the county prosecutor, she did an interview because there was such an uproar after this verdict. She kind of wanted to try and defend it. She said that the 911 call was sufficient evidence to convict Ryan, which it's not. You can't convict somebody off of a 911 call. She brought up the fact that Ryan had looked at porn, which was not something that was brought up in court. That was
also not illegal to do.
Presented in court and also not illegal. She also brought up the fact that Ryan hadn't testified, which you don't have to testify.
Which is also your right to not.
It is your constitutional right to not testify. And the judge will tell the jury, this does not indicate guilt. You cannot judge somebody based off the fact that they decide not to testify. Most attorneys will tell you not to testify. Mm-hmm. Because they can control what they ask you. They cannot control what you get asked on cross. On April 6th, there was a juror who went to an attorney. And this was obviously, this was not long after the trial had ended. He went to an attorney and he brought up some things that happened during the deliberations that bothered them. This attorney instructed this juror to go talk to the police. And this juror said that during the deliberations, three jurors had performed their own experiment. This was different than that timing of the 911 call in the 29 seconds. So three of these jurors had gone home. They were not sequestered, apparently. And they timed how long it would take them to dry off after getting out of the shower, how long it would take their bath mats to dry, how long it would take their carpet to dry. Again, you're not allowed to do this. Jurors are not allowed to perform their own experiments. You have to use the evidence that's presented to you by the state. So because there's too many factors that go into a body drying off, mm-hmm. in a bathroom drying off, you can't mimic the conditions exactly. So this was bad. This was not something that should have been done.
I wish that juror would have passed a note to the judge during deliberations and say, like, there's some weird shit going on in here.
Yeah, you should report things like that. But he or she had a guilty conscience and did. Several jurors after this signed affidavits confirming that this did happen and that this was the truth. The prosecution got affidavits from seven of the jurors. I can't say that word. Seven jurors who said that these experiments did not influence their decisions, but two jurors said that it did. And this, to me, is enough to overturn
mistrial.
The verdict.
Yeah, because that's grounds to overturn.
Which it did. And
good.
Okay, no, just...
Oh, no, I got too happy too early. I should know
yes,
better.
Yes, you did. On July 22nd, 2009, Ryan was granted a new trial. He went from the prison he was in, where he was serving his mm-hmm. sentence, back to the county jail. Bail was again set at $1 million.
Oh, my God.
I believe
here
we it go. Was decreased again because he was out. His parents went through their retirement accounts and got him out on bail.
Again.
Ryan hired three new attorneys. So he unfortunately fired Charlie Rickers. He said, you did great, but this has become a lot bigger than one person and you're not aggressive enough for this. Ryan's mom, Jill, started having severe drinking problems. There were mounting legal bills. She had emptied her retirement account. Ryan's house was in foreclosure. There was a lot.
It's and expensive.
A lot of the times... It's expensive, and she's a victim as well, and she started drinking heavily and problematic and getting into a lot of, just having a lot of issues. Before the second trial, the defense tried to get the 911 call excluded, but the judge ruled that it could be presented in court. The defense was really excited because they found a possible witness that could figure out how long it would have taken Sarah to dry that night.
Was it the medicine cabinet?
No. It was a shampoo bottle.
I mean, the mirror saw it all. Why didn't they call the mirror into court?
I feel like there's a joke there I could make, but my brain doesn't work that fast.
You'll think of it later and then text it to me tomorrow.
It'll be like 3 a.m. I'll be like, ah, there it is. So this witness analyzed the weather that night, the floor plan of the house, and the HVAC system, and thought they could figure out how long it would have taken Sarah to drive. But the prosecution said that this person's methods were not reliable, and the judge agreed, and this witness was not allowed to testify. Before Charlie Rickers was fired, he did find some interesting information on the lead investigator, Lieutenant Braley, found out that this lead investigator had falsified parts of his resume, which the defense wanted to bring up in trial, but the judge said no.
Why? It's just showing that he's a liar.
Mm-hmm. There was evidence that Sarah disclosed on a health form that as a baby, she had been diagnosed with a heart murmur, but the judge wouldn't allow this to be presented in trial.
Past medical history is not part of this. This judge is an idiot murmur, too.
A heart murmur. And yes, it's possible heart murmurs can correct themselves, mm-hmm. but it's also possible that it didn't. And she could have had a sudden cardiac episode, mm-hmm. which is what Dr. Spitz said. On May 10th, 2010, a new trial starts. There wasn't a lot that was really different with the second trial. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to go through all of it again. Just kind of
hopefully a little more intelligence in the room.
On day 3, the jury was taken to the house so they could see the bathroom. The defense really wanted them to see the size of the bathroom to show that if there had been a struggle, that there would have been some evidence in the bathroom of that.
That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm. Again, there wasn't much different from the first trial. Dr. Spitz did testify again. He reiterated his findings about the bruising and the injuries. There was an expert who testified for the defense that said a hot bath can induce a seizure. And the average age of having your first seizure is 23.8 years old. Sarah was 24. And also said that a lot of heart and neurological issues aren't detectable in an autopsy.
Yeah.
The bathtub was brought back in again for another day of testifying. Oh my God. On Wednesday, May 26th, closing arguments began. The jury deliberated 20 hours, came back, and told the judge that they were stuck.
The judge said, come on,
get back
people
out there and keep trying. You got to keep trying. So they deliberated a few more hours with no verdict. They left for Memorial Day weekend and came back on Tuesday, June 1st. They came back at the end of the day on Tuesday and said they could not reach a verdict.
Oh, come on.
It was a hung jury. Ryan's attorney filed a motion to acquit Ryan based on a hung jury, and a hearing for this motion was set.
They're not going to do this.
Oh, yes, they are.
No, I mean, they're not going to just let him, like, acquit him or whatever and let him go. They're going to do a third trial. I feel a third trial coming along.
So, 7 jurors signed affidavits saying they believed Ryan was not guilty and urged the judge to acquit him. 4 went to his acquittal hearing, but the judge denied the motion and set a date for a third trial, January 2011. So we have trial number 3.
Oh my God.
At this point, Ryan and his family, they didn't have any money. They didn't have any money to pay for attorneys. There was an anonymous donor who paid $60,000 for legal.
Wow.
To help pay for his legal fees. And Charlie Ricker's son, he came on as one of Ryan's attorneys, and he worked pro bono because his dad had worked on the first case and he decided to help Ryan out. Something that I think is really interesting is before the trial, the prosecution offered a plea deal to Ryan. They said, if you plead guilty to a lesser charge, you'll get 5 years in prison. He said, no. He said, I'm not going to plead guilty to something that I did not do. This makes me wonder if the prosecution was starting to doubt if they could win this case.
Sounds like it.
There were a couple changes from the third trial. Mm-hmm. Not a lot, but there was one new witness. Her name was Jennifer Jean Crew. She was 36 years old. She testified for the prosecution. She was from Iowa. Ryan had met her on the Free Ryan Widmer website and became friends with her. They struck up a friendship. They talked almost every night. She said that One night, Ryan called her. It was very late in the middle of the night. She said he was drunk and he confessed to killing Sarah. According to this witness, he said he had cheated on her while she was out of town and she had found out. She was frustrated with his cheating, with his drinking, with his smoking, and told him that she was going to leave him. But then she started getting ready to take a bath. She starts to take a bath. They're arguing. She says, I'm leaving you. And Ryan told this woman, allegedly, that he pushed her and then punched her in the chest. She fell and hit her head. He said he then blacked out. And when he came to, she was dead and her hair was wet. Ryan told this woman, Jennifer Crew, that he had faked giving Sarah CPR. He then threatened to kill her if she said anything, but then stopped communicating with her completely because he said he didn't trust her.
I'm going to tell you a big secret, and I'm not going to talk to you anymore.
No. This woman, and I don't want to judge people who have drug problems, she had a lot of problems. She had been convicted of misdemeanor theft and fraud. She had a prescription drug problem. She was addicted to methadone. So she had some issues. She had used several different identities. She'd even lied to Ryan about what she looked like. Mm-hmm. She sent a picture of someone else. Which
she's a liar too.
But the defense kind of ripped her apart, saying, can you really be trusted?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, the information she gave about how Ryan allegedly killed Sarah was all information that had come out in the previous trial.
Right.
So there was really nothing new that she had talked about. The defense looked at Jennifer's phone records and indicated that she did speak with Ryan that night, but it was much earlier in the evening, like 10 or 11, and they had only talked for about 30 minutes. Ryan was communicating with several women, which is not a great look. It doesn't mean he murdered his wife, but it's not a great look. But there was another woman who had spoke to Ryan that night, and she said he was totally fine. He was not drunk. There was nothing out of the ordinary. So Jennifer Crew was questionable.
Mm-hmm.
The defense tried to show, they brought up the fact that the coroner did not examine Sarah's brain properly. Mm-hmm. And this needed a thorough examination of the brain to see if there was evidence of a seizure or a neurological disorder. You have to let the brain set for a certain amount of time in a solution before you can examine the brain, because if you try to cut into a brain right away, this is going to be gross, but it's like Jello or jelly and just kind of falls apart. So you have to let it sit to firm up, and then you can cut it and observe slices of it. But this coroner hadn't done that. This coroner admitted that he didn't even know what parts of the brain to look at to see if maybe she had narcolepsy or a seizure.
See, that's a thing.
The defense also brought up the fact that Sarah could have had something that was called long QT syndrome. And this is a disorder that causes people to pass out suddenly. Like, you have really extreme heart rhythms, and it can cause you to pass out. This is a very rare disorder, and it's really hard to diagnose. But people with this disorder do have a higher risk of drowning because mm-hmm. they very suddenly will pass out and lose consciousness. Also interesting, at the end of this third trial, the prosecution wanted to add involuntary manslaughter to the list of charges. So this is a lesser charge, and the judge agreed to this. And I think that it's another sign that they didn't think that they could win this.
Yeah.
If they're offering this lesser charge.
Like a little bone for the jury to...
Right.
And you have to prove less, I think, isn't it? Like, isn't the amount that you have to prove sort of gradually less for the different murder charges?
I don't know.
Charges?
I think it would be easier to prove involuntary manslaughter than aggravated.
That's what I mean.
And also, your quote star witness, and I don't mean the bathtub, I mean Miss Jennifer Crew, what she told kind of indicated involuntary manslaughter, that Ryan shoved her and punched her and Sarah hit her head.
Yeah.
And then he blacks out and wakes up and her hair's wet. So I'm wondering if they thought
they're making it up.
The jury might go toward involuntary manslaughter more so than aggravated.
Mm-hmm.
Ryan did not testify again in this trial. The jury deliberated 12 hours before reaching a verdict, and Ryan was found guilty of murder.
Oh my God. These jurors are idiots. I'm sorry. Okay.
No, you said what a lot of people, I think, are thinking. Ryan was asked if he wanted to make a statement, and he said, after all this time, he still didn't know what happened to Sarah, that they had no answer. He never hurt his wife. He just wanted to know what happened to her. He was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. He will be eligible for parole in 2026. Unfortunately, Ryan's mom passed away in 2013, and he was not allowed to go to the funeral. Also, this was a bombshell shocker. Ryan has a kid. So Ryan met a woman while between trials, also named Sarah, and they struck up a relationship, and she got pregnant and had a kid. So he has a son, Ryan Widmer Jr. This was hidden during the third trial for obvious reasons, because a lot of people had strong thoughts about it.
Not a good look. Yeah.
It's not a good look. It's really not. I mean, I don't want to judge somebody who's trying to find happiness.
But is it relevant either? Would it even be?
But it's not relevant.
It's not relevant to what happened back then anyway.
People move on, but it's like during the trial of your wife's murder. Really?
I mean, Scott Peterson dyed his hair and then traveled with thousands of dollars in cash.
That punk.
So, I mean.
Speaking of punk, do you want to hear some of the reasons why the jury found him guilty? Reasons that they gave in after trial interviews?
Because he uses Tresemme shampoo and not Pantene?
They said Ryan was a punk. And they could tell he was guilty just by looking at him.
Now, see, when a juror makes comments like that are public after a trial, then that should be like an automatic like grounds for appeal or a mistrial or something.
Yeah, it gets worse.
Because if you openly admit, I think he looks guilty and therefore he is, and I didn't base this on the evidence, then that verdict should be tossed.
Mm-hmm. They also said they thought he snapped and killed Sarah, which was never brought up in trial. Mm-hmm. Also, that's the involuntary manslaughter charge. Right. You could have found him guilty of involuntary manslaughter if you thought he snapped. They said, this one kills me. The evidence didn't prove him innocent.
Oh my God. Okay. I was going to have to take a drink of water for that one. I'm going to prepare myself.
The evidence didn't prove him innocent. What is the number one thing that you say when someone is arrested? Innocent until proven guilty. And the burden of proof is on the prosecution, not the defense. The prosecution has to prove someone guilty. The defense does not have to prove somebody innocent.
Well, not just that, but you can't be proven innocent in court. You're either proven guilty or not guilty.
Guilty or not guilty. Being right. Proven... But you are innocent until proven guilty.
Yes.
That's what it is. And you're... It's not the defense. Oh, God. The defense is not there to prove someone innocent. The defense is there to defend their client while the state proves the case. The burden of proof is on the state.
Nobody knows how trials work. This is why I would never, ever, ever want to commit a crime and have a trial by jury. And
there's more. No, oh God. I'm not done.
Hang on. I'm not ready. Done. I do need a drink. Hang on just a second.
They didn't like that Ryan didn't testify, which can't be held against him. We've said this before. You cannot find somebody guilty based on the fact that they did not testify. It is your right to not testify. Everybody else, if you're summoned, you have a subpoena, you have to testify. The defendant, you're given the choice.
Did the judge even read jury instructions and tell them this, or did he just tell them, all right, y'all go in the back room now.
Just go. Have fun. A friend of the juror, she said that she spoke to this juror member during the trial, and the juror said that they had made up their minds early on and thought he was guilty and he was going to burn in hell. And that one blew my mind, because I don't understand.
That should be
not
it.
A mistrial.
Oh my God, that should get that verdict tossed out too.
I know, because even if a jury is not sequestered, you are instructed to not speak to anybody about the case. You're not allowed to talk to anybody about the case.
I don't think it's I don't know if it's illegal really, but can a juror be criminally charged somehow for violating these rules?
Know.
I mean, I don't think so, because I don't think it
most
is
most of
like
the time they just get tossed
I think it's
out.
Just I think it's just more of a guideline, like don't do this.
It's a guideline. I don't think it's against the law, but you're going to be tossed out.
But you're like, you're responsible when you're on a jury like that. Like, you have a person's life that you are deciding exactly what happens to. You need to take it more seriously than that.
Exactly. And there's a podcast I listen to called The Prosecutors. Great, great podcast. They're two prosecutors. And they were talking in a recent one I listened to about how close jury members usually get during a trial.
Yeah.
Because they're not allowed to talk about yeah this like shared experience. So they talk about things like their family and their jobs and their homes and their pets and whatnot. And they become very close. But that they are instructed, if you hear anybody talking about this case, you have to report them. Mm-hmm. You are obligated to report them. When they're eating their meals, there's usually people that are watching and listening to make sure that they don't say anything. So it's taken incredibly seriously. It's a really important thing when you're on a jury to take it seriously, mm-hmm, because like you said, you have somebody's life in your hand.
Right.
Even if this isn't a death penalty case, you still just sentenced somebody to life in prison.
You did. Yeah.
You didn't follow the instructions that I'm assuming were given to you. I assume that they're given to you. One juror gave an interview afterward, and in this interview said the coroner had checked the brain for narcolepsy but didn't find anything. But the coroner himself said that he did not check the brain for narcolepsy.
He didn't even know what he was looking for.
No. There was a motion for a mistrial for these reasons.
Juror misconduct.
The judge denied it and said the verdict would stand.
This judge is an idiot too for letting all this happen. Is he appealing? Do you know?
Oh, yes.
Good.
For sure. There had been a Dateline episode as this all had been happening. And then after this third trial, there was an updated Dateline episode, which Ryan was interviewed on. He was interviewed with his girlfriend, Sarah, which upset a lot of people. And I can see why. Maybe leave her out of it. Mm-hmm. Ryan was understandably angry, but he crossed a little bit of a line when he blamed Sarah's mom and then the paramedics and police and said they were just out to get him. It wasn't a good look. He didn't come off well. I can understand being angry. Yeah. I would be too. But I think Sarah's mom especially needs to be left out of it. And when you start saying people are out to get you, you kind of come off as
yeah, kind a of a jerk,
iffy. In 2018, a woman named Janice Heisel, she was a reporter with The Enquirer who had covered all three trials and wrote a book called Submerged, Ryan Widmer, His Drowned Bride and the Justice System. And one revelation in this book was when she had gone through some documentation of the trial and found a statement in Ryan's own words that had never come out in trial because he didn't testify. But Ryan talked about that night and he described after Sarah had kissed him goodnight and went upstairs to shower, that she walked away and he wrote that she walked on her tippy toes like she sometimes did. This doesn't seem like a big deal, but actually walking on your tippy toes can be a sign of a neurological or medical disorder. And this author looked into some of the disorders that Sarah possibly had, and there were symptoms with some of these disorders, such as partial paralysis of the legs and feet, which yeah would cause you to walk on your tippy toes.
Huh.
But none of this was ever brought up in trial. And it was just such a small statement that he gave that it was just kind of ignored. But she thought that was really interesting, that it could have pointed to something. It could have just been another layer of possible disorder right that Sarah had because of this weird tippy toe thing. Ryan is currently appealing his case. The last action appears to be in 2017, and his lawyer argued that the testimony, that there had been testimony that was based on junk science. I'm not entirely sure what that testimony was, but they also brought up the bathtub and said the bathtub was illegally seized. So I'm wondering ooh if it wasn't on any search warrant or anything when they pulled the bathtub out. Mm-hmm. His appeal for a fourth trial, they're trying to get a fourth trial.
Oh God.
It was denied. And the judge who denied it said reasonable jurists would not disagree with this conclusion, meaning
no,
reasonable
I think
jurists
they
would not come up with anything different.
I think they would.
That is the case of Sarah and Ryan Widmer.
Man, this poor dude. Like,
I know.
I don't think he did it. I think there's so much reasonable doubt that she had a medical episode in the tub and it was just something, a bad accident.
You know, if I had to choose whether he did it or not right in the second, I lean more toward he didn't do it.
Same.
But for me, the point of the story is not whether he's guilty or not. It's the fact that he did not get a fair trial.
Three times he didn't.
I don't believe, based on the evidence that was presented, he should have been convicted. I think that's the bigger issue. And I think things like that should really scare people, that somebody can have this amount of evidence against them, meaning not a lot of evidence, mm-hmm. can go through three trials that were not fair and can be thrown in jail. I think that that's a really scary thing. And regardless if you think someone is guilty or not, they should have the same representation that somebody who is not guilty has.
I mean, this is the system railroading over a person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you not understand? I don't understand how the jurors like don't get reasonable doubt from this.
I don't either. It is big time. Well,
I don't understand either. Like, why didn't the judge allow her medical history to be a part of it?
I don't know. I believe they thought that there was enough evidence showing that he had committitted this murder. But they should still put that up as a defense
as part of mm-hmm. why he didn't do it. And it should have been allowed. Ugh.
This judge is
horrible too.
Her medical history might not be that extensive. She had these problems, but.
But a lot of people, and especially young people, you can have problems. It's like me, I get mm-hmm. migraines, but I don't go to a doctor every time I have them. I've only right. mentioned it to my doctor a handful of times. I don't take prescription medication for it. So to somebody just looking at me on paper, they think maybe I just get a bad headache every now and then. But to people mm-hmm. that know me, like you and Ryan, that sees me like every month with an ice pack on my head, just talking about how, like, don't talk to me right now and turn off all the lights. Like, if I'm just really, really still, then maybe it'll go away.
Right.
Like, yeah. You guys know it's worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't understand how he was convicted. And setting aside, I don't think he did this, but setting all that aside, it boils down to he didn't get a fair trial.
No, he didn't.
And the evidence wasn't there, especially the stuff that came out with the jurors afterward, that to me seems like a clear mistrial. And the fact that the judge said, nope, it stands, is a really kind of unsettling thing.
You know what? I get a jury of your peers and all that, and that's great. However, I think if you're selected for the jury, maybe just take a pop quiz about how the process works and see what you score. And if you score below a certain amount, you're not allowed to be on a jury.
Right.
Because you can't comprehend the information that's put in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when the George Zimmerman trial happened after he shot Trayvon Martin. And there was an interview with one of the jurors, and then they were talking about, or it was a potential juror maybe, but they were talking about having a hard time finding a jury there because it was so much of a prominent case there in Sanford, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually they did pick a jury, but one person that was called up potentially was like, I don't watch TV. I don't read the newspaper. I don't watch the news. I just like watch Keeping Up with the Kardashians and go play tennis every afternoon and go to brunch with my friends or whatever. I mean, and I'm sitting here thinking, I wouldn't want that person on my jury. I want somebody that has read about this case, that has read it from multiple sources and can maybe mm-hmm. know how, you know, the trial process works and would be able to change your mind. Like, I don't want you to go in with no information whatsoever, because I'm wondering, are you smart enough to be able to comprehend that information and make a critical thinking decision with
right.
that information?
You want somebody who possibly knows the trial, but can look at it in an objective way.
Like, even if I had my mind made up and I got on a, like, the Jodi Arias case, I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. it, bitch is crazy. She did it. And then, like, if the evidence showed me something different, I would 100% change it based on what the evidence said.
Mm-hmm. You have to pay attention to the evidence that is presented. And if it does not prove it beyond a reasonable doubt, then you have to say not guilty.
I know. And that's definitely reasonable doubt here.
There is reasonable doubt. And I don't know. I feel bad for him. I don't think that he did it. I think there's enough there to show that it's quite possible that she had some kind of medical episode.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree.
I just, so far his appeals are not going well, and it's really hard to get a conviction overturned, especially after three trials. But you know, it does happen. So I'm sure he'll exhaust all of his appeals, and he will be eligible for parole in 3 years.
Oh my God. Too bad he can't sue the jurors that's like had admitted they already had their mind made up.
I know. That part kind of blew my mind. So
I just can't believe there's nothing that can happen to people like that. If they're just like, yeah, I made up my mind. They probably didn't even pay attention to the evidence mm-hmm. and the trial, and we're going to vote one way or the other regardless.
Mm-hmm. Which is sad. It's something that needs to be taken very seriously. So yeah, that's it.
That's insane. That is insane.
It's one of the stories where you think it's over after the first trial, and it's like, nope, we still have two more trials to go.
Oh God, that's insane.
So yeah, we'll see if there's any updates. I did check. There wasn't. The last update was a month ago, and that was about that Janice Heisel, her book. She was talking about her book, and that basically there's no updates. Back in 2017, that fourth trial was denied. So gosh, I don't exactly know where they are in the appeal process, but I'm sure that they will exhaust all of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all I've got.
Damn. That's insane. It really mm-hmm. is. People are idiots. Stay out of trouble. But I mean, I don't think he was in trouble. I think it was just a health mm-mm. episode. And stuff like that, too, are going to make people a lot more hesitant to call for help when they need it as well. Because if they think, oh, crap, like we went hiking and like my friend had an episode and they're unconscious on the trail, like, oh, shit, like, am I going to be charged with something?
Right.
Like, what do I do?
You know, even if you're innocent, you think, you know, there's nothing that's going to point that I did this. It's going to show that this person had XYZ happen.
Yeah.
And I'll be fine. But it's scary that something like that can happen, that you can come into the bathroom and find your wife dead in the bathtub, and then you end up in prison for her murder. Mm-hmm. It's sad. They were so young, and they'd only been married 4 months. And from what everybody said, they had a really good marriage. So it's really sad.
And also, I know her life insurance policy wasn't active yet, so it probably hadn't paid out at all.
No, it wasn't active. It would have been, that wasn't even a motive.
But like, even like her parents or her family or like, nobody would have got that money when she died because it went down as quote murder. Mm-hmm. If it was accidental, like maybe, I don't know if it would have paid out or if after a certain time or if it just because it's inactive, because I don't know, I don't have life insurance.
I have no idea.
I have like a little policy through work that's like included in my benefits package or something, but I really know nothing about it. But yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. So if there's any updates,
let us know. You. Yeah, thanks.
We'll see how many more times I see Widmer vans around me. Everywhere.
That was a bummer story.
I know. Sorry about that.
It's really like... It is really bummery. So thank you.
Everybody, be careful out there. If you're ever asked to talk to the police, get a lawyer.
Just don't talk to police. Yep. Never do it without a lawyer present. This has been The Darker Side of Life, the podcast that bums you out.
Yes. We're happy to do it every other week.
We are happy to bum you out. We get bummed out too. So, you know.
That's our next t-shirt.
We're happy to bum you out.
Yes.
All right, and I guess we'll see you guys in 2 weeks to bum me out a little more.
Yay. See you then.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Was the most country what the hell I've ever heard.